Nintendo is deleting Mario Maker levels for just using hashtags, claiming it's advertising. Plus, another game streaming service is shutting down and offering no refunds. Tonight is April 12th, 2026, and the Bobby Blackwell Show, featuring your calls and chat comments, is up next. So you would say, even if... Okay, I'll let you go. You talk. Wow, what happened to your voice? Thank you, Skype. So video games, that's what the show is about.
This is everyone, Akia Ripper from Sweden.
And what's with all the Halo hate, Bob? You've been hating on Halo a lot lately.
I just don't like shooters. I'm not saying it's a bad game, I just don't like it. Billy O.K. says he can't be seen in public playing games that aren't hardcore. What would people say? And what up, G and Chad is once again talking about wrestling. That's why. It's not because they hate the fans. It's more because they have to start from scratch.
Hogwash. Later.
From a little room in Atlanta, Georgia, Bobby Blackwolf.
It's tax day. Almost tax day. Get your bells to Tom Nook. Actually, don't, because that would not get it to the right people and you'd get arrested, and we don't want that. Hello, everybody, and welcome to a non-taxed edition of the Bobby Blackwell Show, where we discuss the current news affecting the video game industry, as well as sometimes reminisce about gaming's history. My name is Bobby Blackwell. If you're joining us live here on the Voice of Geeks Network, welcome. Thank you so much for being here. We do try to tape the show live just about each and every Sunday night over at our the Voice of Geeks Network Twitch channel, twitch.tv/VogNetwork. Come join us, interact with the show directly, and I'll be trying to read intelligent comments from chat throughout the night. There is a chance that we will not be here in 2 weeks, but I don't know. So maybe I will know by next week if I'm going to be here in 2 weeks. I will be here next week, but maybe I might or might not be here in 2 weeks. So Fifth Dream says they don't arrest you for not paying taxes. They just dock your pay. Well, I mean, you know, you could get fined enough that you go to debtor's prison, and that could happen. But yes, and Dark Soccer says, I find the world taxing enough. Yeah, I didn't screw up on my taxes because my taxes are fine. Where I screwed up is before because they, quote unquote, simplified the tax process when you are have joint income. So if you're married filing jointly, they simplified it. And I screwed up the simplification. So I've gotten a really, really huge refund the past couple of years. And we finally figured out why. And it's because we misunderstood the direction. So we were giving them way too much money up front, which meant we got huge refunds. So we fixed that. So I'm not getting a huge refund next year. But if you're married filing jointly, and I am not a tax accountant. Do not take this as legal advice. But if you are married filing jointly and you have enough of an income disparity that you need to take out extra so you're not underpaying, because each income only takes each company only takes out the taxes based on that income and not necessarily other person's, you only need to do that with one and not both. So talk to a tax accountant. We had enough income disparity, and you only need to take out the extra out of one paycheck, not both. You can split it between the two, but I'm not a tax person. Obviously, and I got my refunds back, so it's just they held on to my money for an extra year that they didn't need to. But anyway, also, I will mention as well, because I was kind of cryptic last week. I'm like, I've had a miserable week, I can't talk about it, and everybody's like, oh my God, what's going on? It was jury duty. I was on an 8-day case. I got summoned. I went in expecting to be like, oh, it's going to be, you know, I'm going to get sent home. Usually I'm sent home by lunch. Or, you know, maybe a 2-3 day case, which is fine. Like, I'd never served on a jury. So, you know, I wanted to see. But then there was like, no, it's an 8-day case. They called in 73 people. And this week is spring break here. So, like, 30 people were like, I already have vacation plans. We're taking the kids to Disney World and all that stuff. So, I got called onto the jury. Now, am I going to tell you what the case is? No. And it's not because I'm under any legal obligation that I can't talk about it. What I will say is it was white collar crime. So it was not a murder case or anything like that. But I have actually read newspaper articles about this case. So I'm not going to tell you anything about what the case is. I'm not going to link the news article just because I don't need anybody contacting me to talk about the case. Yeah, so I basically, That's what I was talking about last week. Like, nobody's, I'm not in trouble. There's no bad things. But, like, that's why I had a miserable week. And I had a miserable this week until, you know, Wednesday afternoon when I was finally dismissed. And I got my $25 a day from Fulton County, Georgia. So I will probably get called in a year. And they're like, oh, you've already served on an 8-day case. So you're prime suspect. You're not prime suspect, but you're prime jury candidate because you now know exactly how it works. And you're reliable. And we're going to call you every year like clockwork. So I bet next April I'm going to be on another jury here. They're going to call me every year now because that's kind of, they actually did say that's how it works. Like once you've done it once, then they know you're reliable. You are more likely, very more likely to get called again. So yeah. And Fifth Dream says, me at jury duty, how would you describe the case? Consider all the evidence and decide based on the facts. Okay. Bye. That's actually like, so if you've never done jury duty before, that's actually what they're looking for. That will actually say, giving that answer, consider all the evidence and decide based on the facts, that will get you on a jury very, very quickly because they basically spend, with us, because there were 73 jurors they pulled in, they spent 6 hours asking questions to determine if we had any biases or if we, you know, if there was anything in our, basically they were rooting out biases. So if you say, I will consider all the evidence and decide based on the facts, they're like, sold. You're one of our 12. As Sharon and Matt says, my state doesn't bug you for another 6 years after you get to that part. No, we are 1 hour, or not 1 hour, 1 year is here. And I really, it's like, you can't, like the way it is where I'm at. Is that you don't get called for 2 terms, but a term is 2 months. So I could actually get called back in 5 months, but because I actually served on a jury, I can be exempt until that 12 months is up. So, yeah, and Fifth Dream says I actually got him dismissed because police were involved. They did. There was a police officer involved, and they actually asked a question do you believe that police officers stretched the truth to get to make an arrest? And like everybody in the room raised their paddles. So everybody felt that except for the 2 people that were actually law enforcement officers that were in the room. They were the only ones that didn't. So, and Fifth Dream says got out because this month, just because of autism. That's also very valid. Unfortunately, I don't have any hardships. And my company, my day job was very willing to pay my full salary. I didn't lose pay. The part that was the most inconveniencing is I live 25 miles away from the downtown area of Atlanta. And I had to be there by 8:30 every morning. And I work from home. So let's just say getting up and leaving the house and being in downtown Atlanta by 8:30 a.m., for 8 days is not something that I am used to, but that because I am in Fulton County, I don't mind saying I'm in Fulton County. It's a huge county, obviously. Atlanta is in Fulton County, but Fulton County is very long vertically, and I am at the north end of it. If I lived a couple miles further north, I would actually be in a different county. And if I was called into jury duty then, I would actually be called to the county seat. But because I am in the same county that Atlanta is in, I get called in for state and federal cases where I have to go in. And even county stuff, the county seat is also in that same building. So no matter what, as Jerry Matt says, 25 miles to downtown is what, an hour? It's an hour plus. It's so because I took MARTA, which is our train station, train system. It was actually an hour. I would leave at, if I left my house at 7:30, I would pull in, I would get to the courthouse by like 8:40. And that depends on if I made the 7:55 train or I had to wait to the 8:05 train. Atlanta is indeed 2 hours away from Atlanta. So, but it was about an hour and a half each way because it was getting to the, then I had to walk 4 blocks from the train station to get there. They offered us parking, but it would actually take me longer. Like it probably would have taken me 2 hours if I drove all the way down and parked in their lot and took their shuttle and things like that. So anyway, I did my civic duty. I did not give the judge any reason to hold me in contempt. That's also why I was extremely cagey last week. They did not ask, so they didn't know I did this. They asked about my day job. They did not ask about this, so they didn't know. But once again, I didn't want to give them any reason to hold me in contempt, and I was successful in that. And I am not going to tell you what case it was because, like I said, it actually did make headlines. So I don't need to be associated with that because I don't need anybody asking. Because the journalists will try to find the jurors to try to get insight into what happened in deliberations. And I don't need that smoke in my life. So we're not going to have that. So that being said, I will just say this because, like, it's my first time doing jury duty. It was interesting. I wish it was only for 2 to 3 days instead of 8 days. It got a little old after like day two, but they always say it's so very important because you'd want to be judged by a jury of your peers and stuff like that. So, you know, there are worse things you could be doing than jury duty. Not many, but there's worse things you could be doing than jury duty. So just, you know, if you have a valid exemption, yes, absolutely use it. My wife does. She's got a valid exemption. She's never going to sit on a jury. But if you're able to, I mean, it is what it is. And what one of the things they say, like, yes, right now, I don't have the highest opinion of the country that I live in, but it literally is one of the few things they require citizens to do if they are able. It's that and pay taxes. And that's it. So, you know, that's my spiel. I am not looking forward to ever doing it again. So I totally get it. Trust me. But unfortunately, I bet you I'm going to be on another one next year because once you're in, you're in. But there's a whole bunch of like valid exemptions. If you have learning disabilities, if you have medical conditions, even if they're temporary medical conditions, if you're a caregiver, a primary caregiver of, a senior citizen, your parents or someone that's under two, you're a single parent, you don't have any family in the state. Like there are plenty of ways you can get exempted, which is why they called in 73 people to find actually 14. We had two alternates and we didn't know who the alternates were and one person got sick. So one of the alternates became a real juror, and we don't know who it was. We just know the one person that got sent home. So anyway, this is not a jury podcast. It's a video game podcast. So let's talk about video games and talk about one of them that's going away. Or not a video game, but a whole service that's going away, and there's nothing you can do about it. And you're not going to get anything out of it either. So Kotaku reports that Amazon Luna, the company's barely talked about struggling game streaming service, is once again making some big changes. This time around, Amazon is removing the ability to buy new games through the service or sign up for third-party subscriptions like EA Play. And in June, any games you did buy through Luna will no longer be playable via streaming. There will also be no refunds. So it's not, I don't know if it's exactly shutting down or what, but it's kind of a weird thing here going on. So on April 10th, Amazon announced that it is always looking for ways to better serve our players, and that feedback has made it clear, and all these things are in quotes actually from the Kotaku article, that gamers who use Luna want easy access to great games. And because more of that content is now offered by Amazon Prime, the company has decided that the best way to serve you and other users is to rip out most of Luna's gaming options and remove access to paid games you bought in the past. So starting on when this was posted, Amazon will no longer offer individual game purchases or new third-party subscriptions. You'll still be able to play games you bought on Luna for a bit. Then on June 10th, Amazon is removing that feature completely from Luna. If you linked your Luna account to Ubisoft, EA, or other third-party service, Amazon says you'll still be able to keep playing your purchase games through those stores and apps. But if you don't own a device capable of playing any of those games natively, and you know the whole point of Luna is you didn't need a gaming PC to be able to play these games, you will essentially lose access to your purchase games in June unless you buy some hardware to play games like Star Wars Outlaws or set up a different streaming option. Amazon is not offering refunds for anyone for any games purchased through Luna either. At least when Google killed its streaming service Stadia a few years back, it refunded game purchases. People in chat are even talking about that because there were a couple of us that did have Stadia. Launched in 2020, Amazon Luna has never been much of a hit for the company. It struggled to even figure out what to do with it. Initially, it was offered up as a Stadia competitor, providing access to the big and small and third-party games. This did not work out for Amazon, so in 2025, Amazon officially announced plans to pivot Luna to a service focused on Jackbox-like casual games. The latest shakeup for Luna further focuses the service on those kinds of games and will put everything available on the service behind different sub-tiers similar to Game Pass. S. Jerry Matt says, I keep forgetting Luna exists until I check my Prime rewards. Zemmuk 11 asks, will I still be able to get my free games every month? They're getting rid of third-party games. I don't think so. I mean, they're trying to pivot and they're trying to figure out what to do with it. And Esther and Matt does say, and I'm going to speak this evil into the world. I hope he doesn't. Honestly, I thought Amazon would have stopped the Prime sub option by now. So, yeah, a lot of us actually figured that as Amazon was going to stop your one, if you have Amazon Prime, you get one free subscription, a 30-day subscription to a Twitch channel. And so you basically can invoke that, and it's like you're subscribed to the channel. The channel creator gets the same amount of money as they would if you'd use cash. Or your card or whatever. Nobody uses caches anymore, unfortunately. And we all thought like 2 years ago they were going to kill it. They haven't yet. It's going to come. It's going to happen. I just hope it doesn't happen anytime soon. So consider using it on the VOG network. Then you won't see ads when you're watching our streams. But use it on your favorite creator. And if that's not us, at least you're supporting another creator, which is great. Amazon doesn't really know what to do in this space. And nobody really does. But also, you know, another thing to remember is the story we talked about last week is like how indie multiplayer game servers are getting shut down because the companies have said, you know what? These AI companies are willing to pay us more for the exact same server hardware that we're charging you very little for your little multiplayer game. So we're kicking you off. And your computer that your game was on is now going to be, you know, doing some LLM model and doing some of that stuff. I wonder if Amazon's doing the same thing. They're like, you know what? You know, this very powerful hardware we've got that's streaming these games, we could be using it for the AI infrastructure. And that means we don't have to try to get new data centers because communities are rising up against these data centers being built in their backyards. So it's actually getting harder for some of these companies to find the land and be able to actually build the data center. Because while the governments are very willing to let them have the data center, the communities, the people that live around the forests that they're cutting down are fighting back. So they've already got all these data centers. They've already got all these servers. They're just doing things like letting someone play Star Wars Outlaws without having their own PC. Well, that graphics card could be better served training an LLM. And so that's probably part of this. It's probably a cost savings where they get their AI infrastructure, but, you know, it's with stuff that they're already using and they're just repurposing what they already have. Because the people with the AI are willing to pay way more than people who want to play Star Wars Outlaws without having a gaming PC. Now, the flip side of that is that one of the hopes that some of the companies probably had with the fact that RAM is very expensive and storage is extremely expensive is that they would love for a day when you, the consumer, having a PC that is capable of running these games inside your house without going through their stuff, that is a luxury. They want that to be a luxury. They want that to be too expensive, so then you would spend a monthly subscription on something like Stadia. So they do it for you. It is cheaper for you in the short term because instead of buying a $1,000 PC, you're instead paying a $20 a month subscription to play all those games that you would have played on your $1,000, $2,000, $3,000 PC. But now they're getting rid of that infrastructure and replacing it with something else. So Esther and Matt says Luna lasted 4 years. Google would have killed it in two. Google did kill it in two. That was what Stadia was. So, RIP F's in the chat for what Luna was. Luna has not gone away, but they're trying to figure out what they're going to do with it. And it's going to be, if it's really casual stuff, maybe that's the market that they think is going to work now. I was always skeptical of streaming just because of bandwidth issues, because not everywhere in America has the good enough bandwidth to have low latency game streaming. Those that had it, like my bandwidth was fine, great. And so Stadia actually did work great when I tried it. And I know in other places it worked when you're in a good place with good bandwidth. Yeah. These streaming services, they work great. Game Pass works great. But most Americans aren't in that situation. And that's a hard sell. One other story that I want to talk about here. This one's actually one that was very interesting. And it's something that I had some comments about some other game developers that I've talked with. This is about an indie game developer, about what they are and aren't going to say publicly. And the game developer has a different reason. I don't think it's a real reason, but it is a very good sentiment because the thought is correct. The underlying thought is correct. It's phrased in a way that I don't think is completely correct, but the underlying sentiment is I completely agree with. Video Games Chronicle reports that Papers, Please and Return of the Obra Dinn creator Lucas Pope has shared some insight into his current status as a developer. In an interview with Mike Rose of No More Robots co-founder and Rami Ishmael, Vlambeer co-founder, in their podcast, Mike and Rami Are Still Here, Pope explained that he had no aspirations to build a team of developers and was simply content to sit at the computer, draw at the keyboard and write some songs and put together some programming code to try to make games, unquote. Ishmael suggested that while he's the sort of developer who has one foot in the medium, like I like to make stuff, and one foot in the business side of things, Pope instead is foot first in the medium and creating things purely because he wants to until one of his projects reaches the point that he realizes he could probably release it as a game. Pope replied that he doesn't often get to the stage where a game is ready, and that while he likes to work on things until they're finished, he also usually likes sharing what he's working on, but he no longer has the inclination to do so because he's worried his ideas will be copied before it's finished. So that is the part where he's saying, where I'm like, yes, I understand that. He goes on a little bit here. Pope explained, quote, I don't get to the point where it's done that much. I do have this kind of curse that I really want to finish things. Actually, I'm very production focused and in the sense that I want the production to work. I want it to be efficient. I want it to finish. I want it to actually produce something in the end, but I also like to talk about the stuff I'm working on. And I think just now that the situation kind of feels different to me, that if you don't really talk about stuff when you're working on it, because I don't know if it's going to get slurped up by AI or people are going to copy it or something else like that, unquote. So he continues on. But ultimately, the worry is he announces his idea and a bunch of other people will be like, you know what? I can vibe code that. I'm going to do it. And they can get to market first. And Rami Ishmael of Vlambeer actually had this happen to him with Ridiculous Fishing, which was his kind of his breakout game. It was a mobile game. But there were competitors on the App Store before he even launched from, you know, China and Korea and stuff like that. And they actually did better than his game. Even though it was an original concept, he released trailers, he talked about it, and before he could even launch, competitors, knockoffs, showed up on the App Store. And that was kind of like the first time anybody really heard of Vlambeer is because of that incident with Ridiculous Fishing. And so to hear Lucas Pope of Papers, Please and Obra Dinn talk about it, I mean, it's a very real worry. And now with people being able to vibe code with AI, where they can put something out in hours, whereas it probably took him weeks. Yeah, of course he's not going to give a teaser or talk about the game early before it's made, because he'll talk about it and 3 days later somebody will make his idea and have it already up available to download. It is not that AI is just autonomously coming up and slurping it up and making a game without any human involvement. That's not happening. But it's always happened before where, you know, people who are, you know, looking for cheap hits and easy money, they will go and they will take an idea and make it really shoddy and then, you know, put it up on the App Store and make millions. And then the original developer who had the original idea that got stolen, that copied, he's not the first to market anymore. This is what happened with Ridiculous Fishing. It wasn't first to market anymore, but like, well, why would I get Ridiculous Fishing when I already have this other thing that was actually a copy of his idea that they just got to market first because Rami Ishmael took too much time and tried to make it really quality, and people don't care about quality. So I totally get it. And also, sometimes if you say too much too early, that also blows up in your face. When people ask me, because I've been doing the media thing, I was actually in games media for the longest time. I don't really consider myself in games media anymore. I'm more of just a commentator at this point. But back when I was, like, going to E3 and meeting bigwigs, everybody's like, so who's the most interesting person in the gaming industry you ever talked to? And I didn't get a chance to interview him on camera, but I did actually get to talk to him because I was helping with a website that did interview him on camera because they were Canadian, so they had way more access than I did, and they just brought me along. But it was Peter Molyneux. And so what I learned about Peter Molyneux, and this was in, I think, this was in the Fable days, is that, because when most people hear Peter Molyneux, they're like, oh, false promises, fake promises, bad advertising, blah, blah, blah. Fifth Dream says, BRB making ludicrous fishing. I think that's actually what the ripoff was called. I honestly think that's what it was called. But anyway, Peter Molyneux. What I basically learned from the time I was talking to him off camera is that he loves what he does, and he is very excited about what he's doing. And he has a lot of great ideas that he fully believes that he'll be able to implement. And he talks about them very early on in the process. And then it comes out that then cooler heads prevail. He gets a real project manager, and there's deadlines, and there's actual, like, financials involved. And it doesn't quite live up to what he initially thought. And he would know this, too. But because he is so excited, he is so passionate about it, it is genuine. The thing is, you can probably sit there, oh, it's not genuine, he's just a shyster. And I'm like, no, I literally got to talk to him. Yes, he was on, because it was in a booth at E3. But it was not on camera. It wasn't being recorded. I got a glimpse into the real Peter Molyneux. And he could have benefited from not talking about things so early. And I think that's the thing that I learned from Peter Molyneux is that, and even just gamers in general, whereas, like, in the media, we understood when a developer like Peter Molyneux would say things like, you're going to be able to grow an acorn, put an acorn in the ground when in the child, and then when you're an adult, there's going to be a tree in that exact same spot. And that didn't, I don't think that ever happened in Fable. But that was, like, one of the big things that everybody was talking about with Fable. And us in the media are like, okay, that's a great, you know, early design document. But when you give that to the consumers and they have that context right there, or they have that quote right there, that is an advertisement for an actual feature that is going to be in the game. And when it's not there, that's false advertising and we have grounds to sue. Which has actually happened a couple times. Like, gamers have tried, I think it was Mass Effect or something, where gamers are like, no, the developer said this 5 years ago when they were in the early design and early planning stages of the game, and it's not here now, that's false advertising. And what we've learned is that the best way is that you don't talk about the game until it's almost done, which is counterintuitive to every marketing person, every marketing cycle ever, because you need to get your name out there well before your game comes out. Like, they'll tell indie game devs this all the time. Like, don't wait till your game's out to start marketing, because that means you're going to get nothing. You need to have marketing, and you need to have that stuff in the months leading up to your game's release. And Mike Deft says, what we learned from Peter Molyneux is not to be like Peter Molyneux. And I disagree, because once again, I think Peter Molyneux is very passionate. He is very excited, and we need passionate, excited individuals that love this medium in the medium. We need people like that, and we need people who can talk eloquently about it, which is what he did. It's just he was talking about the art, and we are listening about the consumer product. As Jared Matt says, I wonder if it's the old school way of thinking that doesn't work now. He's been developing since the 80s. Yeah, I mean, with all of these things, like, there's now, that this side, at least the marketing side, you know, the false advertising side, yeah, I mean, that we didn't care that much about that in the 80s because it was a much smaller market. And also, like, not everybody could do this in the 80s. So, like, yeah, you know, he could talk about populace, and somebody may see that, you know, there's stuff about populace, but nobody else is going to be able to make populace, which is the game that he's known for from the 80s. Nobody else will be able to make a populace clone in the same amount of time and beat him to market like you can now. And when you have somebody like Lucas Pope from Papers, Please, and Oberdin, who's actually the impetus of this story, he makes the games by hand. He actually kind of says in here he makes the game by hand. And somebody with that is proficient with Claude Code or Cursor or whatever could probably make the same game as him in less time. It most likely and very likely will not be as good. It will very likely be more buggy. It would have a quality hit, but it'd get out before his. And that is now a very real concern, because you don't even need to know how to write code to vibe code a game. And there are a bunch of people on YouTube that are, showing, you know, that, you know, they made Donkey Kong with Claude Code in 10 minutes. And yeah, because Donkey Kong exists, that's why they were able to do it in 10 minutes. But when you have somebody else's design, and you do that, and you tell it to the game, the engine, the whatever LLM, yeah, you're probably going to get there to something that's playable and something that you can at least sell on the App Store and ride the wave of the fact, oh, Lucas Pope's making this game, so let's make it, because it's obviously a good idea. And you're going to be able to get to market faster with a lesser product, but you're going to get there first. And people are going to be like, well, why should I buy Lucas Pope's ripoff of this game over here that wasn't all that good to begin with? Now, there was talk about No Man's Sky in here, and ZenMonkey11 actually says, I don't remember the No Man's Sky team saying the game was this or that. I thought they didn't say much of anything about the game, and gamers just filled in their own blanks and assumed stuff. It could be wrong, but that's how I remembered it. And there was a little bit of that, too. They were put on... Sony didn't do them any favors, like, by putting them on Stephen Colbert and, you know, basically putting it all out there and showing all this stuff. And yes, there was a lot of blanks being filled in, but also a lot of people didn't actually play the game when it came out. They were so predisposed to hate it, and so they don't even try it. And in fact, the last time this podcast heard from the person in our in the opener that talks about Hogwash was about No Man's Sky. And one of the things he said that why it was disappointing at launch was because there were no space battles. And when I brought up that my first death was because I got attacked by pirates in space and I lost the space fight, he said it wasn't enough. Because he didn't play the game. He was just saying that it was terrible. And because it didn't have any space flight. And it didn't have any space fights. It had no dogfights in space. And when I brought up it actually does, he basically said it's not enough. It didn't do enough. Yeah, so I get it. Absolutely. Keep working on your craft, Lucas Pope. I know you don't listen to this podcast. It's fine. Keep working on your craft. And when you have something that you feel that is great for people to play, I look forward to hearing about it like very quickly before it releases. All right, and then the big story, this one I think started coming around last week, and I didn't cover it, and I've got a little more context on this, and this is Nintendo being Nintendo and making it very hard to be a fan of Nintendo. That's what this is. So, and I'm positive there is some AI involved in this. Not in the way that you think, but there is some automation or something going on driving this. And I'll give my hypothesis with no actual knowledge a little bit later. But IGN reports that players still plugged into Super Mario Maker 2 have accused Nintendo of suddenly removing thousands of user-made levels, which the company has apparently claimed broke its rules on advertising. So this is the Switch game released in 2019. Super Mario Maker 2 allows you to construct your own fiendish Mario courses, or easy ones, for other fans to follow. Years later, and long after Nintendo itself is done adding new content, the company is now removing fan courses with hashtags in their title or description. So, fans have spotted numerous reports suddenly cropping up on Reddit and social media. 7 years after the game's launch, users have been told their courses are being deleted. They have now been picked up and verified further by the game's veteran YouTuber community. So, Pangeum Pangame says, quote, "I recently found out by email that one of my courses was removed. The email doesn't really give an explanation as to why it's removed, like in depth, but it does say that your nickname and that content you shared, either through a game or an online service, has been deleted or hidden from other players because it violates the Nintendo account user agreement, including the community guidelines," unquote. The reason given is advertising, and notes, quote, "This is Nintendo's final decision. If violations continue, other actions, such as restricting your usage of Nintendo account services, may be taken. We appreciate your cooperation in creating an enjoyable online environment," unquote. After checking the detail of the removed course and game, he noted that the course's description included hashtag Team Shell, the name of a Mario Maker level creation community. Judging by other user reports, the inclusion of a hashtag is all that's required for someone at Nintendo or some automated process to pull levels. Why it's happening now, however, is something of a mystery. So, and there, it's even pulling levels from like 2020. Like, these are levels that have been fine for years. So, a little more context on what levels are getting pulled is that, well, A, when you post a level in Mario Maker, it does not say anything about not having advertising. It does say, the pop-up actually says you can't have harmful content, you can't have other people's IP, blah, blah, blah. But none of these levels have any of that. Like, none of these levels actually break the rule that is shown every time before you publish a level to the service. And these are not using glitches, these are actually passable levels. But what they do, what the Mario Maker community did is in order... they actually have a community where there are team whatever. And in this community, you'll have Team Shell, which are Kaizo-like levels that where you have to use a bunch of shell jumps. And so you can actually go through and search Team Shell or hashtag TS, and then you would be able to play a lot of levels that are like that. But then there's Team Precision, which is a platforming team, where if you want like really precise platforming levels, you would look for hashtag Team Precision or hashtag TP, which does not have anything to do with your bunghole. But there are other teams. There are multiple of these hashtags, and the way they would do that is it would be in the description, so you would know kind of which community is making this level. There are also casual levels and things like that. So a lot of these levels now are getting deleted, and we're talking like almost 10,000 levels. And these are levels that are legendary in the community. They are and once they're deleted, you cannot re-upload it. It is still on your local Switch, the person who made it, but you can't re-upload it. You can't take the hashtag out. But even then, they started deleting some levels that didn't have the hashtag. It just said Team Shell. It didn't have a hashtag on it. And Nintendo thinks this is advertising because what Nintendo thinks they're doing is what I do, where I put Vogue Network in the description of whatever I'm doing, but I don't put a hashtag. But it hasn't my levels. I have not gotten an email that any of my levels are gone, and it's Vogue Network is usually somewhere in there, which is totally an advertisement. But these aren't advertising anything. It's just denoting what community they are working in. This is a wider push from Nintendo to police user content, possibly. In a separate but oddly timed incident, according to IGN, games journalist and tech expert John Lindman from Digital Foundry reported having a Switch username changed to just 3 question marks by Nintendo, seemingly due to the EU part of his profile name being perceived as part of a website address. So basically what they're thinking is... like if I made a he probably made like Digital Foundry EU, Digital Foundry JP, Digital Down Foundry EN or US, but the EU digitalfoundry.eu is an actual URL, most likely. And so it'll be like, well, you're trying to advertise an email, your address. And Tackle Law says a lot of these levels are probably the super hard ones that nobody can beat unless you are someone who speedruns them. That's literally what the community's for. Like, this is a community of people that love those hard, super hard Kaizo levels. There are also communities for more casual levels that are easier to beat. But like Team Shell, yes, those are Kaizo levels. Team Precision, yes, those are Kaizo levels. And that doesn't mean they should get deleted, because there is the people who are still playing Mario Maker 2 in 2026 are the people that play those super hard levels. They're not playing the people who played the easy levels. They're gone. They've moved on to other games by now. And so Esther and Matt asks, so someone complained and sent a cease and desist about a level and they decided to take down everything from the community. I don't think so. Dark Sakura is more where my hypothesis with no actual knowledge is. This is what happens when robots do your job. I fully believe that there was somebody at Nintendo who asked an LLM or installed an AI agent that said, we want to make sure that there's no advertising in these levels. And it's like, great. How do people advertise? They use hashtags. And when it would see a bunch of hashtags of the same thing, Team Shell, Team Precision, TS, TP, it would be like, well, obviously they're advertising and they're gaining numbers, which as a human, and we look at the context, we know they're not. It's not an advertisement. It's more just a grouping, because they allow hashtags. They've allowed you to use the number sign. If they didn't want you to use it, they should have like not let you put the number sign in your description. But the AI doesn't know context. It doesn't know what Team Shell is. It just knows it's a hashtag. And people use hashtags to advertise. And so it's gone. And then that's why Team Shell, without a hashtag, also gone. Because why would they be putting Team Shell if it wasn't to advertise something? And you shouldn't advertise on Nintendo products. They also... And Esther and Matt even says, so might be someone something is someone hitting a button, expand auto mod parameters. I'm not even sure if that's the case. I'm sure they probably said, hey, do something. Hey, agent, do something that lowers the advertisement. We don't want people to advertise. And then it just goes and does it. Because the whole point of using a generative AI tool like that is that you don't have to babysit. It does the job for you. It does the painstaking stuff for you. It identified the 10,000 levels to delete, and then it just deleted them. It didn't come back to you to ask, because that takes up your time. Now you are free to do something else as part of your workday. And Immortal King says, so no one monitored the botch action, so lazy. The thing is, if you ask the people that run the AI companies, that's the goal, is that you don't need to think about what the bots are doing. They just do it. You tell them what to do, and they do it. You don't need to babysit them. That's wasting your time. And Dark Soccer says you have to be very specific in writing a good prompt. And that's true, but not everybody's all that specific. And Questbrush says, remind me of when NVIDIA's own DLSS5 video was taken down after a copyright strike from an Italian news channel that used the footage. There is basically what the community is asking. There are several YouTube videos about this. One has been shared in our Discord server. But what the community is asking is like, hey, fine. If you don't want us to use the hashtags, we'll take them off. Let us re-upload our videos or levels, put our levels back, whatever. We'll take the hashtags off. If that's your sticking point, we are willing as a community, the Mario Maker 2 community, we're willing to not use the hashtags anymore. Just let us have our levels back. And that's all they're asking. They're going to get nothing, because Nintendo's not going to, Nintendo probably doesn't even know that this happened, because remember, they probably just told AI bots, hey, let's get rid of some advertising. Get advertising off of our network. We can't have advertising. We have kids on our network. We can't have that. Which I understand. It's very noble. But they're not blocking me saying VOG network. But one thing that I do wonder is this going to move over to other things? Because I mentioned VOG network in my Animal Crossing Island for one thing. Is that now running afoul of this no advertising thing? Is that something that's going to happen? Tomodachi Life comes out this week. Is that going to be something that we restrict? It's like, you know, I can't call it Vogue Network because it's technically advertising if I call it that. You know, Bobby Blackwolf is not my real name. Bobby is. Blackwolf isn't. But if I call myself Bobby Blackwolf, are they going to say, oh, you're trying to advertise for your podcast? You can't call yourself that, even though it is my online name and has been for 30 years. But now it's an advertisement. So I hope that maybe somebody at Nintendo will pay attention. But remember, this is also a 7-year-old game. I don't think they care anymore. And that's why they're having the AI agents sweep up the riffraff. And because they're not, you know, people are still paying money for the Nintendo Switch Online subscription. So they are paying monthly to Nintendo. But they're not getting new sales of the game because of this. Like, if you're going to buy Mario Maker 2, you've already bought it. They're not expecting any more sales. And there are other Nintendo games, so if you stop playing Mario Maker 2 because of this, maybe you'll continue playing the other Nintendo games. So I don't think they're really all that worried, which is a shame. We're going to take a quick music break. We will talk more about this type of stuff and anything else going on in the gaming industry that we want to talk about for the last 10 minutes. But we're going to take a quick music break right now. You're participating with the Bobby Blackwell Show here on the Voice of Geeks Network at twitch.tv/VogNetwork.
You're listening to the Bobby Blackwell Show. Woohoo! It's a number one.
I thought chatter about video game radio was number one.
I'm number one. The heck with everybody else. You're listening to the great radio show. Now have a rotten day.
Thank you, Charles Martinet from 2006, for that bumper. We've been talking about Mario. Charles Martinet had nothing to do with this, so still good in my book. If you want to leave a bumper, you do not need to be voicing anybody. All you got to do is send me an MP3 of just your voice or a video of just your voice coming back to the Bobby Blackwell Show, and I will choose which DMCA violation to put behind it. And yeah, we can have some new stuff. One of the things that was mentioned in the music break, and I wanted to kind of mention this because I hadn't brought it up here on the show, Immortal King during the music break actually said, "I miss video games live," which was the touring orchestral, kind of like the original touring orchestral video game tour, basically, where they would go to different cities. It would actually be a local orchestra, local union, musicians union orchestra, that would play video game music set to their arrangements set to video. There are now a bunch of these, you know, Dear Friends from Final Fantasy was another one. But now, like, you've got the Sonic one that travels. There's an Undertale one that's going on. So now it's like kind of a big thing. But Video Games Live was really the pioneer. And I said, but there, he's like, I miss Video Games Live. But thing is, they're touring again. They are back. And yes, but before I say anything, Tommy Tallarico is still involved and he's still there. He actually still shows up on stage. They are actually on tour now. In fact, in 2 weeks, April 25th, 2026, they are in Huntsville, Alabama, and then with the Huntsville Symphony Orchestra. May 29th, 2026, they are in Austin, Texas, with the Austin Symphony. And January 2nd, 2027, they are in Salt Lake City, Utah, with the Utah Symphony. And they, I believe they were just in North Carolina like a month ago or so. So Video Games Live is touring again. And you can find out more at videogameslive.com. But remember, just in case you do have an inclination and you have feelings about Tommy Tallarico as a person, realize this is still his thing. He did give up in television, but he did not give up to Video Games Live. He still shows up on stage. He still plays his guitar. He is still very much a part of Video Games Live, and he will be there. So just keep that in mind if you're okay with that. Then Video Games Live is actually a really amazing experience. I've always loved every time I've been able to see Video Games Live. And I wish them all the best. And unfortunately, I am busy, so I can't go to Huntsville. Huntsville is absolutely within driving distance of me. But unfortunately, I got other things going on. And unfortunately, not going to be able to make it out there. So coming up next here on the Voice of Geeks Network at twitch.tv/VogNetwork. Is Orange Lounge Radio 2DX, as I sit here and try to fumble through to find it. Orange Lounge Radio 2DX three people that talk about more than just games. They talk about all things geek culture for much longer than I do, and we like to check in with them to see what's going on in their world. OLR, are you there?
I sure am. Hi.
Hi there. So let me ask you this.
So is Midna.
Hey, Midna. Look at that.
Yeah.
There it is. There. Midna's debut.
Yeah, she's being saucy.
Yeah.
All right, hi.
Hi. I unfortunately have to keep my door closed because I don't need to be distracted by my cat trying to climb on my shelves. So, because that's what they do when I talk. Like, it's. I wish they could be in here more. They're still kittens. Kind of. Yeah. Like, they're teenagers now. So I think they're probably like a year and a half old now. So they're still kind of rambunctious.
Going to be 14.
Yeah. So, like, no, when I had a cat that was like 20, like, yeah, she was in here all the time. And it was fine. But, you know, when they're one and a half, I learned, like, I would love it if they were in here when they were like sleeping, but they don't want to be sleeping when they're in here because there's so many things to like crawl on. And they're still in that young stage. So, and I've always locked them out during the podcast just because it doesn't make good radio for me as a solo podcaster to get interrupted by my cat. It happened once and it was not good. Yeah. And it happened like in like year one. One of my cats was hiding under the desk. So I thought I had locked them all out. And then he came out as I was like doing my podcast. I'm like, oh, you were hiding under the desk. Let me take a quick break and get you out of here so you can go out and, you know, eat or, you know, use the litter box or something because they were locked in here.
Midna just lays on the blanket in the background usually.
Yeah. Yeah. So my 20-year-old my old cat before she passed away at 20, which is an amazing life. I had a beanbag chair that I never sat in, but that was her bed. And it was right behind me, and she would basically be there all day. I'd be at work on Zoom meetings because I worked from home and everything, and she'd just hang out back there. And I have cat beds in here, and when the kittens were actually kittens, they would come in here and like kind of sleep a little bit, but then they wouldn't.
Kittens are unpredictable
at
best.
And this room is not exactly kitten-proof, there's ways they could hurt themselves and stuff, so... I actually have not let them back in here in like a year. But now that it's getting warm outside and I have like warm computers in here, I'm going to need to figure out how to get this kitten proof so I can open the door to the hallway and let the air flow.
I can give you some ideas offline.
Okay. That'd be wonderful. Yeah.
Yes. I was going to say it has been... interesting, the things that are going on. I was listening to you talk about Luna.
Yeah.
I had a bit of traumatic flashback to the end of Stadia.
Yeah.
And Amazon, man, I don't want to talk worse than other people are talking about them.
Uh-huh.
Given that, you know, they own the platform that we're record on. Live through.
Yeah.
And, you know, provide me a platform off of this. But they make some questionable decisions.
Yeah.
So does Nintendo.
Everybody always makes all of the big companies make questionable decisions just because they are looking at it from a different way than we are. Mm-hmm. And they are, because I've talked about this with art multiple times, is that great art takes risks and great business leaders minimize risk. Which is why it sucks when you have your creative medium run by MBAs, because they are designed to eliminate risk. And I guess Luna, somebody came in and was like, Luna is too risky at this in 2026. We have less risky endeavors that we could be doing instead. Let's do it. And everybody looks at the bottom line is like, yes, ha ha, let's do it. And you don't have people that are here for the passion of it. Because in order to have the passion for it, you got to take risks. And in order to have a successful company, you need to minimize risks.
Mm-hmm. Or people who were on that line, you know, the ones who began as the passionate people, it eventually wears out the further up the food chain you go.
And I bet, I don't know if all those people are even still there, because there were a whole bunch of layoffs at Amazon Games for the long, you know, several recently.
Absolutely. And I mean, that goes the other thing too. If you take out, you know, probably it's the newest people who get let go first, and you take out the people who have the passion, the people who have, mm-hmm. you know, who could have that spark that you need desperately, and just let it go. I mean, yeah. What's the point of that?
Yeah. So, it's a blow for people who did depend on it because they couldn't afford a gaming rig, or if they were on something that couldn't play these games. Myself. Yeah. Yeah. Cause you were in that boat for, you're still in that boat really. I guess because you still have alternatives still, right?
Well, yeah. On some games, like Dead by Daylight, mm-hmm. I have to play on GeForce to access my Steam account.
Yeah.
So the good thing is that my cloud saves are there. I have all of that, but it's the only way I have to play that on computers that I own right now. Mm-hmm. Because they use the easy anti-cheat, and it blocks me using crossover. Mm-hmm. Doesn't stop cheaters. That's a different story. Yeah. But at any rate, you know, we're lucky that we have different options, but like GeForce is not cheap.
No.
You know, Luna would have been a really good alternative, especially if people already had like a Prime account and mm-hmm. could take advantage of it. But I mean, those types of services are the most economical for people who don't have the same options, who might be on a Mac, who might not have the best computer, mm-hmm. who might have to, I mean, even if you're traveling, you know, something like that is good to be able to play your games. I remember playing Dead by Daylight on my iPad at TwitchCon one year mm-hmm. because I had my controller and I could do it.
Yeah.
You know,
but I wonder how many people actually are in that market to take that up on it, because like what we're seeing with Xbox is that was the whole This Is an Xbox campaign, was that mm-hmm. You can use anything to be your Xbox. Your iPad can be your Xbox, your smart TV mm-hmm. can be your Xbox, and they got so much pushback they fired the person responsible for that, and they changed out the CEO, and they've walked back that whole campaign.
Yeah, because, I mean, for the most part, I think that the target audience for those games are already either going to have the console or have the computer or have some other means, like a gaming laptop or something to that effect. I don't think that the majority of people using the service was going to get a lot of value out of something like that. Mm-hmm. And I admit, us, you know, Mac gamers, we are a handful. We are a few.
Yeah.
We're getting bigger.
Yeah.
And, you know, call out to all of you developers out there. Game porting kit works.
Yeah.
But whatever.
It sucks for the people that used it. And it sucks that I think it's going for just more generative AI, LLM processing. But, you know.
Gag.
Yeah. It's tech is not fun right now. So what else are you going to be talking about on Orange Zone Radio 2DX tonight?
Oh, we have this and that, including a longtime Super Mario Brothers glitch being confirmed. A definite major loss for the gaming industry, for a lot of us fans. Some stuff about Project Helix. Mm-hmm. Something that you touched on about the Kindle thing.
Yeah.
And how would you like a hotel room full of 30 Pikachu?
Ooh. Do they talk?
I don't know. I'm afraid.
Ooh.
I'm very afraid.
We'll find out more on
Do you want to just... Do you just want to wake up to just... Pikachu!
I mean, didn't Nintendo release a clock that you can do just that?
Yes. But imagine 30 of them.
Orange Sound Radio 2DX is up next for all your nightmare fuel. Thanks so much, Jamie.
Anytime. Bye.
So that is it for me. I will be back next Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, right here on the Voice Geeks Network Twitch channel, twitch.tv/VogNetwork. Come join us. Interact with the show directly. I may or may not be here the following week. I will maybe know by next week. It's kind of up in the air. But I will let you know then. But yes, come join us, interact with the show directly, or you can find me on Instagram @BobbyBlackWolf, Blue Sky @BobbyBlackWolf.com. or on our Discord server, vognetwork.com/discord. If you like the show, tell a friend. If you hate the show, tell an enemy. I don't care. Just tell someone. The show is not for everybody, but it may be for somebody who does not know about it yet, but we would not be able to make this work without the help of the chatters who go above and beyond. Thank you so much, Dark Tetsuya, for resubscribing. Thank you so much. Resubscribed for the 48th month or 63rd month. Twitch math is weird, but Dark Tetsuya has been here since the beginning, since even before I was here. That's how long Dark Tetsuya has been here. It's been longer than me. So don't look at those numbers and think it's any less. Thank you so much. And Dark Tetsuya actually also points out in chat they didn't put any Pokemon on Alarmo. But I'm sure somebody could hack it. Mike Def says Pokemon Sleep actually does wake you up with 10,000 Pikachu. Anyway, I'm going to wake you up by hitting this button that plays this music, which means that means I have like 10 seconds left to get stop talking. And, you know, sit here and wonder how I'm going to tell you to see you next week. So, bye.
A winner is you. The views and opinions expressed are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and are not necessarily the opinions of
the Vogue Network, people who need to hire new voiceover guys,
or your mom. Although if Bobby said it, it really should be. This has been a production of Bobby Blackwolf Studios.